When Cal steps out of his house in rural Ireland, he spots rooks attacking a young rabbit in his garden. He watches them kill it with calculated precision, appreciating their intelligence despite their wariness of him. This moment captures Cal's new life perfectly, raw, natural, sometimes brutal, but honest. After 25 years on the Chicago police force, Cal has traded city blocks for endless fields and distant mountains, seeking peace in a landscape that feels both ancient and alive. But lately, his tranquility has been disturbed by an unsettling awareness that someone has been watching him. His cop instincts, honed through decades of service, have been quietly alerting him to surveillance. Though initially welcomed by the locals with surprising warmth, Cal now senses something has shifted. Little does he know that his retirement project of renovating an old Irish cottage will soon pull him back into the role of detective, a role he thought he'd left behind in Chicago, but one that will prove impossible to escape when a desperate child appears at his door seeking help for a missing brother. Cal's days revolve around restoring his newly purchased Irish cottage, a project that gives him purpose and structure after leaving his police career behind. The renovation work proves both therapeutic and challenging, each task revealing new complexities beneath the cottage's weathered exterior. One crisp afternoon, while working on an antique oak desk in his garden, a beautiful piece with delicate carved curls and nested cubbyholes that reminds him of his grandfather's study, he's interrupted by his neighbor, Mart, and his sheepdog, Kojak, who has developed a habit of appearing precisely when Cal settles into focused work. Mart, a talkative older farmer with weather-worn hands and decades of local knowledge, dispenses unsolicited advice about everything from the superiority of Irish meat to Cal's love life. He particularly fixates on matchmaking, insisting Cal should date Noreen's sister Lena, describing her virtues with increasing enthusiasm during each visit. The farmer's persistent presence, though sometimes intrusive, offers Cal an authentic connection to the community he's trying to join. The gentle rhythm of Cal's days continues with regular walks to Sean Ogg's pub when weather permits, following winding lanes bordered by ancient stone walls. He's careful not to drive his noticeable red Mitsubishi Pajero, fearing a DUI might jeopardize his firearm license application, a precaution born from years of police work. At the pub, a centuries-old establishment with low wooden beams and walls yellowed by generations of turf fires, locals playfully tease him about being American and his views on gun ownership. Barty the barman, a repository of local gossip and wisdom, frequently jokes that Americans are mental with the guns, drawing knowing laughs from the regulars. These interactions reveal the community's complex attitude toward Cal, a mixture of curiosity, amusement, and cautious acceptance that slowly evolves with each visit. One particularly stormy evening at the pub, Cal witnesses an unusual argument between locals about what killed Bobby's prize sheep, something that took out its throat, tongue, eyes, and rear end with surgical precision. Bobby, a usually practical sheep farmer, insists no dog could have done it, suggesting aliens while gesturing wildly with his whiskey glass. Others mock this theory, but there's an undercurrent of unease in their laughter. When Cal offers his professional assessment that a dog might have killed it and carrion birds finished the job, he earns a subtle reevaluation from locals who had dismissed him as just another city boy playing at country life. The night takes an eerier turn when a young man named Donnie, known for his quick temper and slow wit, becomes aggressive during a card game, accusing others of calling him a cheater. Cal, feeling strangely vulnerable without his gun and badge for the first time in years, watches as Barty enlists his help to physically remove Donnie from the pub. The incident, though handled quickly, leaves a tension in the air that lingers long after Donnie's angry shouts fade into the night. This seemingly minor confrontation will later prove significant in the web of secrets Cal unwittingly begins to unravel, secrets that have been buried in this close-knit community for generations. One particularly stormy evening at the pub, Cal witnesses an unusual argument between locals about what killed Bobby's prize sheep, something that took out its throat, tongue, eyes, and rear end with surgical precision. Bobby, a usually practical sheep farmer, insists no dog could have done it, suggesting aliens while gesturing wildly with his whiskey glass. Others mock this theory, but there's an undercurrent of unease in their laughter. When Cal offers his professional assessment that a dog might have killed it and carrion birds finished the job, he earns a subtle reevaluation from locals who had dismissed him as just another city boy playing at country life. The night takes an arc or turn when a young man named Donnie, known for his quick temper and slow wit, becomes aggressive during a card game, accusing others of calling him a cheater. Cal, feeling strangely vulnerable without his gun and badge for the first time in years, watches as Barty enlists his help to physically remove Donnie from the pub. The incident, though handled quickly, leaves a tension in the air that lingers long after Donnie's angry shouts fade into the night. This seemingly minor confrontation will later prove significant in the web of secrets Cal unwittingly begins to unravel, secrets that have been buried in this close-knit community for generations. 2 days after his night at the pub, Cal is working in his garden when a young person approaches, a teenager he assumes is a boy, with short hair and baggy clothes. The youth, who introduces himself as Trey, watches Cal work on the desk with intense curiosity. Cal hands him sandpaper and a piece of wood to smooth, explaining they'll stain it later to match the desk's color. As they work together in comfortable silence, Cal discreetly observes Trey. Though not starving, the youth shows signs of neglect, dirty neck, worn clothes with holes, suggesting minimal care beyond basic feeding. The peaceful work rhythm changes when Trey suddenly announces he's heard Cal is a cop. Surprised that his background has been discovered despite his efforts to keep it private, Cal initially deflects but finally admits the truth. He was a cop but isn't anymore. Trey questions Cal further, revealing rumors that Cal was fired for shooting someone. Cal truthfully denies ever shooting anyone and explains he retired because he was bone wary of the tensions between police and communities. When Trey asks why Cal moved to this remote place, Cal explains he wanted somewhere with mild weather, away from cities, with cheap property and good fishing. Their unlikely friendship develops over subsequent days, with Trey visiting regularly, sometimes in mid-morning, sometimes mid-afternoon, suggesting occasional school attendance. The boy typically stays for an hour or two, accepts food, then abruptly announces he has to leave. Even on rainy days, Trey appears, soaked and watching through windows until Cal invites him inside to help with indoor projects like stripping wallpaper. During one of these visits, Trey reveals the real reason for his interest in Cal. "My brother's gone missing." His 19-year-old brother Brendan disappeared on March 21st. When Cal asks about police involvement, Trey explains his mother refused to report it, claiming Brendan simply went off. Trey is convinced his brother was kidnapped and desperately asks Cal to investigate, believing the police are fucking useless. When Cal gently explains he can't investigate without his badge, Trey erupts in anger, destroying Cal's shirt by stuffing it in primer before running off. Despite his initial reluctance, Cal finds himself drawn into investigating Brendan's disappearance. The case awakens something in him, that old inability to leave mysteries unsolved. He begins by visiting the police station under the pretext of checking on his firearm license application. When he casually inquires about Brendan Mehdi, Garda Dennis O'Malley dismisses any concerns, explaining the Reddys are wasters with school attendance issues and a neglectful mother. He's certain Brendan simply left for a bigger town, like many young people do. Cal's instincts tell him there's more to the story. When Trey returns, throwing eggs at Cal's house in frustration, Cal relents and agrees to investigate. They establish ground rules, no bullshit from either of them, and Cal will share whatever he finds. Through their interview, Cal learns that Brendan lived at home with his mother Sheila and siblings, had finished school with his leaving cert, but didn't score high enough for his desired programs, and was described as talkative, restless, entrepreneurial, and creative. Cal assesses the case as likely a runaway situation. Brendan fits the profile. Bored, restless underachiever with a difficult home life, no job, girlfriend, or close friends, and no prospects. He estimates a 90% chance Brendan simply left, 5% accident, 5% suicide. But something doesn't feel right, and Cal decides to dig deeper. He visits Brendan's mother, Sheila Reddy, a tall, scraggy woman with rough red-brown hair and a weather-beaten face that must have once been beautiful. Though younger than Cal, she looks older, worn down by life. Cal uses a cover story about needing electrical work done, but Sheila reveals Brendan went off last spring without saying where he was going. Though she tries to rationalize his departure, Cal senses her worry is substantial and specific. As Cal continues investigating, he interviews Brendan's friends and ex-girlfriend. Eugene Moynihan, a college student studying finance, reveals that Brendan had a money-making scheme and became terrified when police passed by days before his disappearance. Caroline, Brendan's ex-girlfriend, describes him as reliable and caring despite his unrealistic tendencies, and firmly believes he's not suicidal or mentally ill, just frustrated with his circumstances. Cal's investigation takes an unexpected turn when Trey reveals that Brendan had a private spot, an abandoned cottage nestled deep in the Wicklow Mountains, where he'd seek solitude. Though Trey had searched there immediately after Brendan's disappearance, he found nothing but what he dismissed as bits of all rubbish. Despite the seeming dead end, Cal's instincts tell him to investigate further. On a crisp autumn morning, Cal and Trey make the arduous hour-long hike up the winding mountain path, crossing streams and navigating rough terrain until they reach the secluded location. What Cal finds surprises him. Instead of the ancient stone ruin he'd expected based on Trey's description, they discover a relatively modern white cottage with faded red trim, tucked away in a natural hollow that makes it nearly invisible from below. The location is perfectly chosen, isolated enough to avoid casual discovery, but accessible enough for regular visits. The cottage's strategic positioning, with clear views of the approaching path, suggests someone wanting both privacy and advance warning of visitors. Inside, the cottage tells a more disturbing story. Far from abandoned, it's surprisingly clean and well-maintained, with evidence of recent occupation. They find a new camping stove still in its packaging, an electric cooler, fresh water bottles, and a newly installed MDF sideboard that seems out of place in the rustic setting. When Cal examines the sideboard more closely, he discovers an alarming collection of items: industrial-grade rubber gloves, professional cleaning supplies, stacks of Tupperware containers, coffee filters, laboratory-quality goggles, and professional safety masks, all carefully organized and methodically stored. The systematic nature of the preparation deeply troubles Cal. This wasn't the workspace of someone acting on impulse or emotion. Every item had been carefully chosen and positioned with scientific precision. The setup speaks of someone who had spent weeks, perhaps months, planning whatever they intended to do there. After careful consideration of the evidence, Cal reaches a chilling conclusion. Brendan had been using his extensive chemistry knowledge to set up a sophisticated methamphetamine operation. The stolen anhydrous ammonia from the Murphy farm wasn't just theft, it was a key ingredient in his planned operation. This discovery fundamentally changes the nature of Cal's investigation. He realizes with growing dread that this situation can't possibly end well. Meanwhile, the community is gripped by a series of disturbing incidents. Local shepherds report their sheep being killed and mutilated in a distinctive and troubling pattern, throats precisely slashed, eyes surgically removed, with rectangular patches of skin methodically flayed down to the ribs. Cal's neighbor Mart, visibly shaken, takes him to examine one of his prize ewes, killed identical to the previous incidents. The selective nature of the predation, always exactly one sheep per farm, with surgical precision in the mutilation, points strongly to human involvement rather than animal attacks. As Cal delves deeper into his investigation, he notices an unsettling pattern in people's behavior. Conversations about Brendan are met with nervous glances and abrupt subject changes. When he pushes too hard for information, he receives increasingly pointed warnings to mind his own business, warnings that come through subtle gestures, meaningful looks, and carefully worded suggestions. Even Sheila Reddy, normally chatty and open, shows visible fear when Cal asks about Brendan, insisting with forced cheerfulness that Brendan's grand before practically slamming her door. Cal notes that these warnings specifically surface when he investigates Brendan, not when he involves himself in other local matters, suggesting something uniquely dangerous about this particular line of inquiry. Cal's dogged persistence in investigating Brendan's disappearance begins to have serious consequences, marking a sharp turn toward violence in the quiet community. After an intense confrontation with Donnie McGrath about the increasingly disturbing sheep mutilations and their possible connection to Brendan's disappearance, Cal returns home to a shocking sight. Trey, huddled at his doorstep, severely beaten, with one eye completely swollen shut and rivulets of blood streaming down her face. In this moment of crisis, Cal makes a startling discovery. Trey is actually a girl named Teresa, though she had never explicitly claimed to be male, allowing others' assumptions to create her protective disguise. Through tears and painful breaths, Trey reveals the horrifying details of her assault. Her mother, acting under mysterious threats from unknown parties who warned, "Do it or we will," had brutally beaten her with a leather belt and kicked her repeatedly. The catalyst for this violence was Trey's own investigation into Brendan's disappearance, particularly her visit to Donnie McGrath. During this encounter, Donnie had issued an ominous warning that she'd end up like Bren, words that carried a chilling implication about Brendan's fate. Cal immediately calls his neighbor Lena, a former nurse, who performs a careful examination. While Lena identifies a likely cracked rib and catalogs numerous cuts and bruises painting Trey's body, she fortunately finds no signs of internal bleeding or broken bones. The situation intensifies when Cal, fueled by rage and frustration, confronts Donnie again, this time physically. Upon returning home, he learns that Mart had been searching for him during his absence, adding another layer of tension to the already volatile situation. Concerned for Trey's safety, Cal takes immediate precautions, covering the bedroom window with a thick sheet to prevent anyone from seeing inside. In a quiet moment, he shares his own experience of being beaten up as a teenager, describing the long, exhausting process of recovery, both physical and emotional, creating a bond of shared experience with Trey. The violence reaches its crescendo that evening when Cal returns from purchasing supplies for Trey. As he steps out of his car in the darkness of his own driveway, multiple dark figures emerge from the shadows. They execute a coordinated attack, throwing a rough bag over his head and slamming him violently to the ground. The assailants use what feels like a metal pipe or bat, delivering brutal blows that crack his collarbone and smash his nose. As Cal struggles helplessly against multiple attackers, a gravelly voice delivers a menacing warning to mind your own business. The situation appears increasingly dire until Trey, showing remarkable courage, emerges from the house wielding Cal's rifle. The crack of her warning shot splits the night air, sending the attackers scrambling into the darkness, leaving Cal bloodied but alive on the cold ground. After the attack, Cal finally gets answers from Mart, who reveals the truth about Brendan's fate. Brendan had been stealing anhydrous ammonia from a local farm to cook meth. Donnie informed on him, and Mart and others confronted Brendan at his mountain hideout. They only intended to warn him, but things escalated. Brendan was defiant, calling them ignorant farmers who should mind their own business. A fight broke out, someone hit Brendan, and he fell backward, hitting his head on a propane tank. He died quickly. Mart and his accomplices buried Brendan in the mountains and said prayers over him. He justifies their actions by claiming they were protecting the community from drugs that would further devastate their young men, who are already lost to suicide, alcoholism, and emigration. Cal tells Trey the truth about her brother's death, that he died in a fight the same day she last saw him, hitting his head after taking a punch. He promises to get her proof in a few days, but makes her swear she'll never seek revenge. Trey breaks down crying, first silently like an adult, then sobbing like a child. Despite his instincts as a former police officer, Cal makes the difficult decision not to report what he knows to authorities. Instead, he accompanies Mart to the remote burial site in the mountains. They follow hidden trails through increasingly isolated terrain until they reach the spot where Brendan is buried. Cal digs through layers of peat until he uncovers Brendan's body, remarkably preserved by the bog, but transformed into something strange with leathery, reddish-brown skin. Cal examines the body, finding evidence of the injuries, a broken jaw, broken teeth, and a severe wound at the base of the skull. He carefully removes Brendan's watch as proof for Trey, then gently returns the body to the earth, hiding any sign of disturbance. Though every instinct urges him to expose the truth and set justice in motion, Cal chooses to honor his promise to Trey, providing her closure without further disrupting the community. The aftermath of Cal's mountain expedition leaves him deeply affected. Despite showering until the hot water runs out, he still feels permeated by the smell of peat and death. He contemplates the mountains in twilight, thinking of Brendan slowly transforming in the bog while Trey heals in the sweet air. When Trey arrives the next day, Cal gives her Brendan's watch, cleaned but no longer working. She examines it silently, rubbing the inscription with her thumb. When she questions whether Cal might have been lied to about what happened, he gently confirms he saw Brendan's body himself and that the injuries matched the story he was told. Without a word, Trey walks out and heads to the woods behind Cal's property to process her grief. Cal texts Lena about getting a dog for Trey and arranges to visit the next day to see the puppies, including the runt he's considering for himself, a mottled black, tan, and white pup with a distinctive black patch shaped like a ragged flag on its back. After giving Trey some time alone, Cal brings his desk repair equipment to the garden. As he works on fixing the broken side, Trey eventually joins him. Together, they work companionably, Cal gluing splintered pieces back in place while Trey experiments with wood stains to find the perfect match. They take a break to eat fruitcake, sitting in the grass watching clouds drift across the mountains, while the rooks converse peacefully in the tree above them. This quiet moment of shared activity represents a new beginning for both of them. Cal has found purpose beyond his police career, not in solving crimes, but in helping a troubled child heal. Trey has found closure about her brother's fate and a mentor who treats her with respect and dignity. The desk they're repairing becomes a symbol of their own restoration, damaged but not beyond repair, requiring patience and careful attention to make whole again. Through his methodical investigation into Brendan's disappearance, Cal has undergone a profound transformation from American expatriate to integral community member. What began as a simple home renovation project in rural Ireland has evolved into deep immersion in the village's intricate social fabric. His detective's instincts, initially viewed with suspicion by locals, have become a trusted resource, though one that must be carefully balanced against the community's preference for handling matters internally. Cal's relationship with Lena has matured organically, defying Noreen's well-intentioned but heavy-handed matchmaking. Their connection deepened during the intense period of caring for Trey, with quiet moments over cups of tea and shared concerns creating a foundation of genuine understanding. Lena's appreciation for Cal's steady presence and his respect for her independence have created space for something authentic to grow. Their easy companionship, marked by gentle teasing and comfortable silences, suggests a future relationship built on mutual trust rather than desperate need or social expectation. The complex friendship between Cal and Mart embodies the moral ambiguity at the heart of small-town justice. While Cal's law enforcement background initially put him at odds with Mart's vigilante approach, their relationship has evolved into one of grudging respect. Mart's involvement in Brendan's death, driven by his fierce determination to protect the community from drug trafficking, forced Cal to confront the limitations of official justice systems in rural areas. Their continued interaction reflects the delicate balance between law and local custom, where community survival sometimes demands uncomfortable compromises. Cal's relationship with Trey has become the emotional anchor of his new life. Their bond transcends simple mentorship, offering both characters a chance at healing old wounds. For Trey, Cal provides the consistent adult presence so notably absent from her life, someone who sets boundaries while showing genuine care and respect for her independence. For Cal, Trey's presence helps fill the void left by his strained relationship with Alyssa, though he's careful not to view Trey as a replacement. Their shared work on practical projects, fixing fences, caring for animals, learning basic home repairs, creates a framework for deeper conversations about trust, responsibility, and belonging. The novel concludes not with dramatic revelations, but with quiet moments that underscore Cal's integration into the community. Working alongside Trey to repair broken things, watching weather patterns across the mountains, and sharing simple meals with neighbors, Cal has found an unexpected answer to his search for purpose. In this remote Irish village, where mist-shrouded hills hold generations of secrets, he's discovered that true belonging comes not from solving every mystery, but from knowing which questions to leave unasked and which truths to protect.